This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Welcome back, Football Friday. We're in Batavia today. Batavia Downs for the Legends and Stars memorabilia show. Many distinguished guests signing autographs tonight and tomorrow. We'll give you more details as we go. If you want to know right now, go to legendsandstars.net. And the autographs get going at about 6 tonight. The show opens at 4:30 this afternoon, so pretty soon. Sal Capaccio with us now on the West Her Hotline. Sal was privy to the latest injury news this morning as Sean McDermott visits his Extra Point show, usually on Fridays. And overall, pretty good, I guess, Sal, at least as it seems going into Sunday.
Yeah, guys, thanks. Good afternoon to you. So the good news is that Terrell Bernard is off the injury report. He has no game status, so that means he's good to go. And McDermott gave a very encouraging sign on him when he met with the local media after my show today. But questionable are three important players. Cornerback Christian Benford, who has a wrist injury. He's been limited the last 2 days of practice, but he did practice limited today. Same with Amari Cooper with his wrist injury. Both wrists, both limited today. They're both questionable. And Curtis Samuel, still with the pectoral injury, he's questionable. For the only player who's declared out right now is fullback special teamer Reggie Gilliam.
How big a deal is it? I mean, I know it's only been two games, but I think we want to, I think, believe that Cooper's having a positive impact. Certainly, statistically, he did in the Tennessee game. Maybe just aesthetically or, schematically, he caused, the Seattle to act differently because of his presence. How big a deal is it to you if he's not there?
Well, it's a pretty big deal because I think that, they have definitely shown a different type of wide receiver core and team and philosophy with him out there. I think, though, with this team they're playing and the fact that they're also banged up, which we can talk about, it might not mean as much or matter as much. I think the Bills have done a really good job against this defense, and maybe Javon Holland or Kader Kohu is going to be out, so maybe it might not matter as much. But sure, I definitely think it matters. I mean, I think Amari Cooper has been a really nice addition to this team. And even though he only had one catch for 3 yards last week, you talk to guys, other wide receivers, they'll tell you that just his presence out there is opening things up for them as well.
I wonder about Coleman just at this point, Sal. We're going to be comparing these rookie receivers forever. So many. Coleman, the eighth receiver of the draft as the first pick of the second round. But, we were kind of freaked out a little bit maybe about what Xavier Worthy would look like with Kansas City. Of course, there's also the Diggs trade. I mean, there were these sort of dark clouds looming going into the season. Coleman would have to, outdo Worthy, at least, and some of these other guys drafted around him. I mean, it's so far so good. The numbers are there. It's not big catch games, but, the offense has been fine, and I would think most people would have taken what the Bills have gotten so far from Coleman.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, listen, he's just growing every week. And last week I did a breakdown and I posted the rookie wide receiver stats right now. And he's fourth in the league for rookie wide receivers, yards. I think Neighbors, obviously missed some time here. But you look at that chart, one of the things that stands out is catch percentage is better than a lot of the other rookie wide receivers. I think his yards per game just overall I think are kind of in line with what you might expect. Now, over the last couple of weeks, I would have said, you know what? I was expecting maybe a couple more big plays as far as touchdowns, but he's now putting those in there. Houston, he had the long run for a touchdown, catch and run. Last week, he had that touchdown against the Seattle Seahawks. Like, that was a guy, he's a guy when he came into the team, I thought, okay, you might not get the volume, but you might get the big plays and the scores. That's starting to happen. I just think that, you know, obviously, Amari Cooper helps. And having a full complement, having Khalil Shakir underneath helps. But Keon Coleman is doing a really nice job, guys. I think he's just growing as a wide receiver. He's growing as a football player. Don't underestimate, you know, that blocking situation that happened last week. That's just showing his complete game and how much they trust him to be on the field. The more that that happens, the more that Josh Allen's going to trust him in all situations as well, because they know that he can handle more and more no matter what's being called out there.
You know, Allen said something I thought pretty noteworthy. Well, it could have been noteworthy. I guess it depends on what he really meant or how you interpret, you know, what he said. But after Sunday's game in Seattle, you know, obviously he was talking about Coleman because he made some plays in the game. And he said, I'm going to paraphrase, like something to the effect of, when he knows what he's doing, he does it very well. Or like the things he knows how to do, mm-hmm. he does very well. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, on one hand, that could be high pointing the ball. It could be physical, right? Like his traits, when he gets to use his size, his good hands, his leaping abilities, body control, he's really good. I wondered if that wasn't Allen sort of cluing us into, like, there, it's a process here, and we've talked about this, right? There was some talk before the last few weeks about moving him inside, just trying mm-hmm. to find a way to get the thing going. And when we talked about it, like, I don't know, is he ready for that, right? Schematically, does he have a handle on all that? And I felt like Allen might have given you a clue that they're, you know, not trying to put too much on his plate.
I absolutely think that's what he was saying. And it wasn't necessarily even like intentional, I want to tell the media this way.
Right.
I think it's just kind of the way he answered it, knowing the truth, which is, hey, I mean, like, when he knows what he's doing, he doesn't have too much to think about, then, you know, he's really good at doing that thing. And look, I mean, we have all heard and had read people, fans believe, a lot of fans believe, that the Bills have some sort of organizational philosophy, at least Sean McDermott does. They don't play rookies. That's just hogwash. It's not true. The roster has been so set up where rookies have had a tough time playing on this team. You don't just come in and suddenly supplant mm-hmm. Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde and Stephon Diggs and Mitch Morse. But now those guys are gone. So now you have to play rookies a little bit more, and including Cole Bishop, which, by the way, what happened was he gets in the game and look what happened. Like, there was a communication issue. There's a lot that goes into a rookie playing right away in the NFL, and especially tough when you have other people in front of you who are just better than you. They've been in the league, and there's no reason to play those rookies. But there have been rookies who played. Christian Benford started from day one as a sixth-round pick. Not the guy they drafted first in first round, but the guy they drafted right. in the sixth round. Osiris Torrance played every single snap as a rookie last year. But now, rookies have to play based on where this roster is. But as the rookies are playing, you can't expect them to have the full workload, the full complement of everything mastered. You just can't do that. You look last year, Khalil Shakir last year, as the season went on, got better. I'd go back and look at his splits. You'd probably know it more than I would, Mike, from his fantasy stats. But at the end of the year, 39 catches, 611 yards. That's his second year. But look at the explosion halfway through his second year. His first year and a half, he did basically nothing for the Buffalo Bills, right? Gabe Davis was nice. He had a couple nice games his rookie year. I think he had some things happen, but took him a little while. Like, it's hard for rookies to do that. So I always thought that any expectation for Keon Coleman to just come right in and start making plays and doing all this stuff is just people not understanding what the reality is.
I think I sold Shakir a little bit short earlier in the week when it came to fantasy by saying, well, you can't really start him. And I was told on Twitter, a listener said, well, he's kind of top 24. He's 21st in the league in yards. Coleman is 30th. So it's more just maybe a little bit of a false assumption that the Bills, because they have so many different weapons, you know, quote weapons at least, that nobody gives you those big spike weeks. But Shakir has done fine, of course, and the big thing about him is his percentage of catching targets. I mean, it's first in the league at 94%. Our guest earlier, Sam Panayotovich, thought of this game Sunday that he thinks it sets up to be a James Cook game. And the first mm-hmm. meeting between these teams was absolutely a James Cook game. And he's coming off a strong performance in Seattle, seemingly all the way healthy again. Do you like this matchup for him for the Bills running game, or was maybe week two a little bit of an anomaly?
I don't know if it was an anomaly. I think that you could probably see James Cook having a nice day here. This is a middle-of-the-pack team when it comes to stopping the run. But I just think that they are really hurting on the back end right now, and I think any chance Josh Allen has to beat this team with his legs and arms, it becomes a Josh Allen game. And the guy pretty much gets a player of the week, you know, award right. almost every other time he plays the Miami Dolphins. I would almost bet. Now, I don't know. We don't know the status of the two receivers, right? Amari Cooper and Curtis Samuel. So that could very well play into, hey, let's give these guys, you know, another week here. We're not putting too much on them, so let's run the ball. There's no doubt about that. But just kind of straight up, if everybody's playing, it's mid-50s. There's no wind. There's no Javon Holland, most likely. He's doubtful. There's no Kader Kohu. There's no Zach Sealer. I would bet it at being a Josh Allen game.
Yeah, not only is he listed as doubtful, I read that McDaniel said he's pessimistic about it, or he was characterized as being pessimistic about Holland playing. So, to me, that's a big piece back there. The other guy, Coho, maybe is a guy you would like to have out there because he's had his tough times, right? But
I'm interested how they play against the Bills receivers too, especially if Cooper is out there. If Cooper's out there and he's playing, and you know, obviously, then you assume that he's healthy enough and everything's okay. You know, what do they do with Ramsey? Is Ramsey going to be on him?
Follow
is Ramsey
going to
be on Keon Coleman because of his length and physicality that he showed last week? That's interesting.
Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. How about the Bills on defense here, Sal? So Miami gets Tua back last week. They lose the game, but there was, you know, at least some life in the offense. Would you expect better from the Dolphins this week? And then, I mean, the Bills have had, of course, plenty of success against him and them. What in particular this week are you looking for?
I think Miami is going to really try to run the ball, guys. I mean, that's what they're going to try and do. The Bills have been susceptible on run defense this year. Now, they've been much better the last 2 weeks. But Miami's run the ball really well. Look at their last three games. 193, 188, 150. They have not averaged less than 4.7 yards a carry in their last 3 weeks. They ran for 6 yards a carry last week against the Arizona Cardinals. So I think the Dolphins are going to come in to look to run the ball. That'll take a lot of pressure off Tua. That will, of course, maybe keep him a little healthier, right? They really got the ball out of his hands quickly last week, his first game back from the concussion stuff. They'll probably want to do that. I'm sure you have, of course, and if you do run the ball, and the Bills have to creep up, then that sets up their ability to throw over the top, which they'd love to do. They haven't been able to do it that much with, you know, the guys they have against the Bills here and there. You have a play to Tyreek, especially a couple plays to Jalen Waddle over the last few years. But generally, the Bills do a nice job, especially against Tyreek Hill, of limiting them. I think that on defense here, Miami's going to try and run the ball and do their best to control the game. And you know what? They've had some success against the Bills running the ball.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how, if this Miami passing game can really get loose on the Bills. The Bills have just done such a good job on them. And, you know, it still feels like, even though he's missed all this time, and you might make this point about the ball coming out so fast last week, I mean, that obviously has its advantages in keeping your quarterback clean and offsetting a pass rush. But it also limits what you can do. And I think, you know, if DBs have their heads on, that they can capitalize on that if you're just trying to get it out of there. Also, you might get hands up. You said this yesterday, I think, right? Hands up at the line of scrimmage.
A lot of hands up at the line of scrimmage. I expect a lot of that. Smaller quarterback getting the ball out of his hands quickly. You're going to see a lot of that, I think, from the Bills this week. Get your hands up. Get in the passing lanes. Try to knock balls down. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Rasul Douglas jump a route or two thinking they're not going to double move me. You know, they're not going to try and take that time and have their quarterback sit back there. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there's a couple of risks taken on the Bills side. Hey, getting Terrell Bernard back is really nice too, right? I mean, look, he's going to play. He's off the injury report. Obviously, he's a really big piece to what the Bills do. You know, so in Miami has a really smart offensive coach, you know. So if you have guys out there, like we saw when Baylen Spector came in week two, there were a couple times he got a little lost out there. And I know he was a little bit new coming in at that particular moment. But that's Mike McDaniel also, you know, trying to kind of hurt the Bills in that regard. So there's no doubt about it. I think, too, that the Bills defensive line should, you know, beat the Miami offensive line. It's been okay. Hasn't been great. They didn't really address it as they really wanted to or should have in the offseason. And then, of course, you get all that motion stuff they try to do. It's harder to do when they're in Buffalo. We know that from the past. I remember, too, one of the things that stood out to me in week two, guys, they just were they kind of waved the white flag on trying to get the ball to Tyreek Hill downfield. First drive of the game, they tried. Christian Benford ran for him stride for stride. Remember that?
Yeah.
They never threw the ball back to him downfield at all. It, like, everything to Tyreek Hill was behind or at the line of scrimmage. It's like, yeah, we can't do it, so let's just find a different way to get him the ball. And I think that is a big mental part for them trying to play the Bills' defense.
Well, we can close with this. I mean, we've talked about the psychological aspect of the Dolphins in this matchup, in the rivalry, with how many times they've lost. It's easy to get to Allen and Tua before Tua got his money. Are the Dolphins going to do that? Are they going to pay him the market rate? Because, like, you haven't been able to – you're not as good as this guy. And that's a dilemma that teams have. And, Sal, I would think McDaniel and McDermott is a form of this. Because McDaniel's supposed to be able to find ways, as he did so perfectly in the beginning, to get these guys open, get them the ball. But against the Bills, it really hasn't been that successful, or at least as often. So, big day for them, big day for the quarterback, and big day for the coach.
Yeah, for sure. And if you go back to last year, guys, I'm looking at their numbers last year. They've only scored 30 or more points one time since week 14 of last year. That's with Tua healthy. That's with Tua not healthy, because I don't think they have this year. Nope, they did not. And that was a 30-point game. And, you know, their offense hasn't hasn't traveled well in colder weather in the playoffs. And as smart as you are as an offensive coordinator, and I say this, I have real healthy respect for Mike McDaniel as a very smart offensive mind. But there's more to having coaching a team than that. You can draw plays and you can do all that, but you better be able to adjust. You better be able to figure out how to counter against these really smart defensive coordinators who are getting paid a lot of money to stop you. And there's a lot of details that, you know, if you go back through Miami, like, they hurt themselves a lot. They do a lot of things that at the end of the game you say, like, yeah, that they could have, you know, done this differently or that differently. Every team can, but I agree with you. It's a big game for him, but they did give him a contract extension earlier this year. I think the rest of this season is a big rest of the season for Chris Greer, their GM, to be honest with you. It feels to me like maybe he could be a little bit more on the hot seat with the roster and the management of the cap and all that than Mike McDaniel is.
Yeah, I said yesterday, I know you got to go, Sal. McDaniel, his, like, Tua's fondness for him, like, you know, we got games to go here, so of course it could get really ugly and we'll see, but I feel like McDaniel is protected because Tua loves him and they're committed to Tua, so like, that seems like a tough thing to break up.
Yeah, and I think just for what he's brought, the type of offense, the style, I think that, you know, it seems like Stephen Ross, that's what he's bought into, that's what he wants. And Chris Greer is the guy that's gone through a couple head coaches now. There was all that stuff that happened with Flores and all that. So I wonder what it means for him as well. Chris Greer, obviously the brother of Mike Greer, who's the GM of the San Jose Sharks. And I just think that's incredible that two brothers are GMs of teams in separate pro organizations.
In different sports, too. Yeah,
I do.
I know. That's what I meant. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thank you, Sal. Enjoy the weekend.
All right. You guys, too. Thank you.
All right. That's our Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy. Case, what's your outlet?
It was for Kansas City, but when I think of Tyreek Hill, it's the touchdown he scores in the 13 seconds game, you know, just before that.
Before the Davis touchdown to put the Bills back on top before the 13 seconds, right. Yep.
It's an intermediate pass. And in Miami, it can often be a shorter pass. You know, the speedy motion and then quickly back in a different direction. But the Bills have been great against that so far. So, and Waddle, how good is Waddle? Very good? Great? Pretty good?
I mean, he's being paid like he's not quite great because it's not top of the market. But he got a huge contract, and, like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's been a lot more. I thought he was the best receiver out of that draft when Miami got him.
Ooh.
And there was a ton of guys there in that draft class. But I thought he'd be he was my pick to be the best one of the bunch. And I don't think that that's happened as of yet. I don't know if any of the other guys have gotten the big second contract like
Chase
he got. Okay,
but
yeah. So I really liked him, and I think he's kind of a letdown.
Devontae Smith got paid.
Okay, right.
So that draft, Chase went fifth, Waddle sixth. He was sixth overall. And then Devontae Smith to Philadelphia went 10th. I think Waddle is very good. I would rather have Waddle than T. Higgins, I think. But T. Higgins was having a nice year, is, I mean, he's been hurt again.
Mm-hmm.
Waddle's thing with injuries was he was getting hurt, like, in not every game, but he was often leaving the field in games and sort of had a tough time getting through a game healthy at different times in his career. But, yeah, I like him a lot. And then Chase will get a better deal than those guys.
He should get right to the top of the market, I think.
He's taken the league lead in receiving yards. That's a bet I have that I'm trying to get them to cancel the rest of the season, right. But they won't listen to me. Devin Achane in the first meeting had a really good stat line. It just wasn't that meaningful. It was kind of weird, I thought, that the Dolphins left Achane in the game throughout that second half when they were way behind. But they had injuries, too. Like, Jeff Wilson was playing for them in that game, and he got hurt, maybe. So they might have been just down to him. I don't remember for sure. But he can be spectacular.
I did feel like they could run it pretty well in that game. And even before the score got crooked, I felt like they just got away from it. Which, you know, you understand the temptation, right? What's our fastball, right? It's Tua, it's these receivers, so let's go. But, man, I felt like they could do whatever they wanted on the ground early in that game. And then again.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My recollection is that they took themselves out of it, and then, of course, the score got so ridiculous, and Tua was hurt, and it was just, you know, it was over. But I feel like they got away from the run before they should have, even before Tua got hurt.
Achane scored a nice touchdown in the Week 18 game in Miami last year, and in the Week 4 game that was the shootout where Miami was coming off scoring 70 points, he was 8 for 101 and 2 rushing. That's a receiver line. That's a Ja'Marr Chase line. But rushing, 8 carries for 101 and 2, pretty short touchdowns in that game. I remember that day, the way that game started, both teams just up and down the field. Vikings-Rams started that way last week, where it was 14-14 after four drives. But then Diggs happened in that game. Three touchdown passes to Diggs. This Kuhu you mentioned.
Had a tough time. Miami. Yeah, couldn't keep up.
And the Bills ran away from the Dolphins. Well, we'll see if that can happen again. Coming up today here from Batavia Downs, we will have picks. Got to be early with picks today because of the hockey game. The Sabres host the Islanders tonight. Pre-game at 6 o'clock. And Kevin Adams will join us to check in on the season so far, his views of it. That'll be at 5:30. We're at Batavia Downs for the Legends and Stars show. Autographs, memorabilia, sports cards. The show opens in 5 minutes. And it'll be until 8:30 tonight, then 10 to 5 tomorrow here at Batavia Downs. $10 admission, and kids 12 and under get in free. That's so nice.
The kids free? Yeah.
You got to get the kids,
sure,
you know, involved in the hobby, right? You
sure
can't charge them.
And if when your kids, I don't know if you want to bring toddlers here, but when your kids are 7 and 5, and you know mom's got to work or she's got a night with the girlfriends or something or whatever, this is exactly. It's good that kids are free because that's a draw, and it's, you know, a time killer for a dad, or it could be the mom too. The dad could be working. Mom wants to come bring the kids. It's the kind of thing I would do with my boys when they were that age, just to get, you know, get out of the house for a little while. The Legos down, you know, I promise we'll stop for slushies later.
Mom has bowling. Could be one possibility. Time for a break. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog will be back in a snap, brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills.
The one thing about Josh is he gives you a chance to get the ball, right? Because he is so strong. He reminds me a little bit like Steve McNair, Ben Roethlisberger back there, where when you get there, you have to make sure you not only try to tackle him, but you almost have equally as good a chance of tackling the ball because he just kind of hangs it out there like a loaf of bread. So I think the biggest thing is to throttle down. Let's make sure we secure and try to get the sack and then try to attack the ball in doing so.
That is probably his first appearance on our show, Miami Dolphins defensive coordinator Anthony Weaver. Saratoga Springs High School.
All right.
Ever been?
I've never been to Saratoga Springs. I've heard very good things, but I've never been.
I love it. Yes. It's a must-do.
Somehow I've made it 59 years.
Saratoga, Lake George.
I'm not against going. It just has not worked out. But I, you know.
In fact, I'm losing respect for you.
Must do. What does it even mean, must?
You have to go.
I have to go.
You
really?
Have to see this movie. Yes. Yeah. If you don't see this movie, we can't be friends.
I don't buy it.
You have to go.
I don't buy must.
You have to go to Saratoga.
I must do nothing. I must do only what I want.
Okay. Well, this is going nowhere.
I would want to go to Saratoga Springs. Again, opportunity hasn't ever presented itself.
But you have to plan these things.
Yeah.
Well, there might not have been hockey tournaments in Saratoga.
There definitely were
there
not.
There are probably places you went to 10 times.
Yes.
That you didn't need to go to twice.
Right. Suburban Cleveland, suburban Pittsburgh, Canandaigua even.
Canandaigua even. I believe my wife told me the biggest girls hockey tournament in the country is this weekend in Rochester.
Awesome.
My daughter is there. They played two games today. They played the Nashville Junior Predators.
That sounds like a big tournament.
Anaheim is there.
All right.
All over Rochester, different rinks.
Love it. That's awesome.
Did you ever do that one? Boys version?
Yeah, we did some pretty big showcases. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Teams from all over the country type of thing. Yeah. I don't know about Anaheim, though. I never saw the Junior Ducks.
They might be the Junior.
We saw the Junior Blues was maybe the furthest we saw.
I've seen the Junior Blues.
Yep.
Yes, Penguins.
Yep.
Predators. Now I'm trying to think if I can name all the NHL teams. Sharks. Sharks, Kings, Dolphins. No, that's not right. Dolphins on the brain. We haven't spent any time this week doing the ritual. Reminiscing about Miami and the, you know, I heard Sal go into that a little bit today, the history and the fans who go back like you and I do to the 70s and, you know, the way the Dolphins just
cheated.
Owned the Bills. Cheated.
Cheated.
Yeah. The teams that have beaten the Bills over the years have cheated.
Don Shula was on the competition committee and that meant that he was cheating.
That's what that meant.
Yes. Don't you see? Of course, it's obvious. It couldn't be more obvious.
What else could it be?
It's not that the Bills are inept. They're finding an unfair advantage from the officials because of Shula's place on that competition committee, which now Sean McDermott, by the way, is on.
Yes, proudly, I'm sure. I don't remember the 70s. I did go to the opener in 79. That was my first Bills game. And probably had some appreciation for, like, Miami was good and the Bills were pretty bad for most of those years. But I can remember watching the first start of Dan Marino's career in the Orange Bowl against the Bills in 1983. And the Bills would not have won there, I think, since 66. And that's a classic game. In Bills history, overtime.
Is this the big
win.
Joe Ferguson game?
Yeah. Yes. And I remember watching that and just being so happy and feeling like something really unbelievable had just happened, that the Bills won a game against the Dolphins in Miami.
I have no question at all that I would have watched it. I don't remember it at all. Like I've seen the, you know, the record book and Ferguson's place in it because of that game. But I don't remember watching that game, and it's a pretty big famous game, and I don't remember feeling anything about Dan Marino, you know. It's just so different. I mean, it's not like I was a little kid. I mean, I graduated from high school in '83, so you know I'm 18, 19 years old, whatever, and I just don't. I have an easier time remembering games from when I was 10. I do remember that game, you know, and this is pre, you know, the mid 80s, late 80s, like, you know, eventually I moved to Connecticut. There's some stuff there that doesn't really fit together for me in those years, you know, like I wasn't as on top of it as I was when I was younger and then as I would be when I moved back home. But even 83 predates all that. And I don't know. It's not an area of Bill's history I feel like I remember well.
What I don't remember about that is what it might have felt like to most of the fans with Marino being the last pick of that famous draft. And here it was, I guess it's week six. I'm looking it up now. That was his first start, I believe. So Miami has its rookie, and he's playing. And in this game against the Bills, maybe it had already happened in other games as a backup, but in this game against the Bills, he looks like a star. And the Bills guy is playing for the Houston Gamblers. You know, the Jets, the Patriots, the Dolphins, all in the division. Did the Colts? No, the Colts. Well, the Colts drafted Elway.
Right, and he ended up.
So I guess, yes, all six quarterbacks, five were in the AFC East.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that. And then Blackledge for Kansas City. So here's Miami's future, their franchise guy. Did we think about it in these sort of terms in 1983? I don't remember.
Yeah, that's it. I don't remember that. I don't remember feeling like I cared at all that Dan Marino was playing against the Bills and Jim Kelly wasn't. And that, like, if that happened now, right? Like if rival teams both drafted quarterbacks in the first round, and one of them was playing against the Bills, and the Bills guy was
playing baseball
in Egypt or something, like we would never stop talking about it. It would be all we talked about, I think. And this doesn't even resonate at all, which is crazy.
Well, part of that is because it worked out.
Sure, that's right, that he eventually came. And even this game, I mean, it's not like this game, but it hurt us. I mean, Ferguson had a historic game.
Five touchdowns.
For the Bills in that game.
Yes, their first win in Miami in 17 years. And then, I mean, it got to the point where it was almost old hat, as they say. The Kelly years.
Right.
You know, sort of dominating Miami in the playoffs, too. And, of course, that's even more true lately, where it's 12 out of 13. But it's still in there, right? I mean,
the
cultural disparities between the cities.
That's always been
easy.
I think for me, that's really it. You know, what is Miami? Like, Miami is spray on tans and convertibles and silicone and it's a certain representation of America that is not even hardly real. I'm sure it is for the people with the fake tan, but it's predicated on false. And, you know, it just feels – it's very easy to judge the entire population of the region in this sort of, they're the pretty girl, the good-looking guy. They're just hot. That's Miami, literally and figuratively. In Buffalo, we're over here. There's no pastels here, you know. This is a very different existence in Buffalo than Miami. Like I don't even know where I would go for a good kielbasa sandwich in Miami.
You'd have to have one. But where would you go for
it? Where would I go? I don't know.
Have you been to Miami? You have to go.
I have.
You have to go to Miami.
I must. It's a must.
Yes.
Yeah. Somehow again. No. I don't even think I've been in the closest I've been to Miami is the Fort Lauderdale Airport.
Not close at all. Not close enough.
Okay, that's it.
Not close enough.
I don't think I've ever been in Miami.
I liked Miami. I wasn't there for a long time. I'm not saying I lived there. I was there for a few days. I liked it. It was so different, like you're saying, that it was really like an adjustment. But I appreciated it. It was fun. And I'm not really for the beach or for the party scene or anything like that. So it wasn't – South Beach was not interesting to me, but like the streets where there's restaurants and people are walking around and palm trees and really interesting cultural variety, I did like it there. You have to go. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
You have to go anywhere you haven't been. The Junior Panthers.
I do like going places. I'm not against going to any of these places. Where was the first Saratoga? Sure. I mean, traveling is healthy. It's good.
It's great.
Broadens your horizons.
We'll take a break. Hear from Batavia Downs, the Legends and Stars memorabilia show. Autograph signings getting underway tonight. Many are tomorrow. $10 admission. Kids get in free. And $10, the admission also earns you $10 in free play on the gaming floor here at Batavia Downs. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, Kevin Adams, next hour. Picks 2, then pregame at 6 tonight for Sabres Islanders here on WGR. I was just about to say a thing about the hockey game, but then I feel like when the guy says it's all Bills all day,
it's a little intimidating.
I can wait. I'll try to slip it in when it's not so
you
obvious.
You said earlier already today the Sabres have won their last 7 home games against the Islanders?
I believe I read that in the game notes.
I would have sooner. I mean, I can be a terrible bettor. I would have sooner bet that they have lost their last 7 home games to the Islanders.
I know.
In my head, pretty recently, there's a game where it seems like their defensemen's shin pads are all 6 feet wide, and they're just blocking all the shots, and it's 3-1 Islanders, and it's one of the worst sporting events you've ever watched in your life. I feel like that is the Islanders game every time they come. So there's the problem. Like, I have this predisposition to thinking they're tough to play, they block logic, they're just annoying, and therefore I never beat them. But you're telling me, and I believe you.
I'm reading it.
7 times in a row, that's stunning.
It's the longest home winning streak over the Islanders in franchise history. I don't doubt that. I feel like this is a team sort of like along the same lines as what you just said that I just can't beat when I need to.
Right.
But they have also won 8 of their last 11 against them in all venues. They've won their last 2 against the Islanders by a combined 7-1.
All right.
That's all from the Sabres game notes today.
Time to put in the Tage Thompson hat trick bet then, sounds like. All right, let's go.
He's in a good place.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. I think we're going to have to reboot that. The season started. I was doing it. I kind of got off of it. I haven't missed yet. I mean, well, I missed a few times betting it, but the times I've skipped it, he did have 2 the one game. Maybe last Saturday he had 2 pretty early, and I did not have the bet. I was like, oh, God,
you're
no.
You're obviously rooting against him at that point.
Yes, definitely. A Sabre win, but just not a third Thompson goal. But I think I'll be back tonight. I'll dip into that.
The Islanders are 3-7.
They can't seem to score, is their problem. And they're without their top guy. Well, he's not having a top season so far. Barzal, I think, only has 5 points so far on the year, but he's left the road trip. He had to go home getting evaluated for an injury, so they will not have him tonight.
We will have Kevin Adams on with us at 5:30 today. The game last night, football. Back to football. Also, not a Bills game, but it was a football game, so we're getting closer to all Bills all day. Jets now at 3-6, and you were the one who mentioned all the time just like how cruel their schedule was. Not so much opponents as
timing. Yeah,
they, 2 Thursday games. And
right.
They went to London. 3-6. Just gonna say it. Here's what they've got at Arizona. Maybe Arizona's not bad. They wanted San Francisco. And what else did they just – they wanted Miami.
They blew out the Rams, I think.
They blew out the Rams. That's right. They could have won here. They were close here.
Yep.
So maybe they're okay. I think Arizona – we'll see what happens Sunday. They have the Bears. Would be favored at home against the Jets.
Okay.
I think. If it were right now, I think they would be. Because the Jets played yesterday.
I think so, too.
That's
why. Yeah.
The Jets would not be given much respect having played yesterday. So at Arizona, manageable, though.
Yeah.
Indianapolis at home. Yeah. That's a Sunday night. Bye week. Seattle at home. At Miami. At Jacksonville. Rams at home. Their tougher games are home games, except for at Buffalo. And then Miami again, week 18.
That's
it's not over.
It really eased up there for them. They definitely are through the hard part of their schedule, both logistically and I'd say opponent-wise too.
And what's ironic about it is, at least in my mind, going back to the offseason when we talked about this team and their schedule and how they have the 3 games different than the Bills have. Like, you know, teams in the division are playing mostly the same opponents, but where the Bills had Baltimore, Kansas City, and Detroit. The Jets had Pittsburgh, Denver, and Minnesota. And they've played all those games, and they lost them all.
Right.
They lost all 3 of those
games.
They
did not get an advantage
playing
that schedule.
If they did, it did not show up.
Well, the opponents have eased up, but I still don't have any faith that they can consistently put anything together. And that's largely because I think the quarterback is going to have a hard time functioning at a high level consistently. He's just, I think he's already beat up this year. I think he's deteriorated physically as it is just with age. I mean, I've said, how many times have I said, I think Brady created an unrealistic and unattainable level of play for quarterbacks when they reach near the age of 40. He was so good and still so prolific. It's just not normal. And I think Rodgers looks about like someone who's at the end. And Brady almost never really looked like he was at the end. There were times when he was still in New England, probably in his prime, where like, oh, he's starting to slide out of the ball, the spirals. He's going to win four more Super Bowls after that. Rodgers is, I can't imagine this going on for another year. However this year ends for him and them, I just can't fathom he's going to play another year after this.
Houston, after their win over the Bills, where they lose Collins, they have the big first quarter, then their offense kind of sputters. Net passing yards in their next four games, 176 at New England, 55 at Green Bay, 267 against the Colts last week. Everybody throws on them. 135 last night. And the Jet defense had problems going into that game last night with injuries. But it's not really there. The running back, Mixon, is kind of holding them up.
Yep. I thought he was the only thing they really had going last night.
A few plays to Dell, a couple of fluky ones. He's good.
Yeah, he went over 100 yards pretty early in that game, I think, actually.
The big play I might have put him over. Yeah. But they'll get Collins back next week probably. Houston is on Sunday night next week against the Lions. That's pretty good. But can Houston do it? I was on them yesterday. Just sort of, I could see them falling apart. And last night did not change my mind on that. Well, 6 o'clock is normally our picks slot, but it can't be today because of the hockey game. So we'll move it up to 5. Picks are next. Then Kevin Adams at 5:30, pregame at 6, Sabres Islanders. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here from Batavia Downs. This is WGR.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.